You're with Lemba Dopik on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Lemba Dopik Show this Saturday. If you happen to be in the United Kingdom, wherever you are, a real pleasure to have your company. And remember, you can be part of the dialogue by going to the tntradio.live website and get involved in the chat. You always type faster than I can read them all out. If I just stayed on the chat, I'd never get to speak to my guests at all. So do get the most out of my show by going for that dialogue. And Mally Bites, once again, big thank you for staying with us. You're not going to regret it, because our next guest is Nick Griffin. I will introduce him in a few minutes' time. This is a debate that I've been trying to have with Nick for 18 years. Before we go to Nick, though, let me cover some of the comments which have been raised as a result of my dialogue with Jada Franson in the previous hour. Hermetica says she's right. We don't need any immigration. They tell us we have to have it if, to fill the vacant jobs. And yet, on the other hand, they say AI will take all the jobs. So why do we need migration? We don't. So that's Hermetica. Malibite says, Jada, thank you. So Malibite is still here. You've got to stay another 55 minutes. Do what you want after that, but you've got to stay for this 55 minutes. Mazzy says, does it matter, immigration, if it works well and benefits? They help the most vulnerable in society, which is not their fault in the first place. Jada was saying that you get rid of the welfare state, and it seems to me that Mazzy doesn't really agree with that. Huge respect, Lembit. Thank you, says Malibite. Well, thank you. It's a competition of generosity today, I think. Mingling a ding dong says om. Does that mean that you're calm and focused? That's good, because you're not always that way. Mingling. Holly says stand by your beds. Yes, indeed, Holly, this is going to be a good hour. Hemingway says tomorrow is National Big Word Day, Len, but it's not really. It's also National Tea Day, straight up. Okay, I believe you. You are the man who brought me National Garlic Day for yesterday. Thank you very much indeed, Hemingway. Silence is scary in the woods. It means a predator is out there, says Mally Bites. And slop out, says Mingling, and on it goes. Well, you're going to have a lot to consider, a lot to talk about in the next hour. I should explain to you that I have been trying to have the debate we're about to have for 18 years. Every time myself and my next guest have been close to having that debate on platforms ranging from Oxford to my old constituency in Montgomeryshire, someone somewhere has threatened violence and the police have been more than happy to shut it down. On one occasion, they asked me for thousands of pounds to pay for the security myself. Obviously, in my view, an effort to shut down the debate. Well, in the end, perseverance pays. And in a moment, I'm going to introduce you to somebody who I think you'll find interesting, and perhaps one of the most important guests I've ever had here on the Lemba Dopik Show. He's a man I've known for a long time, but never been able to debate with in a live one-hour broadcast before. Ladies and gentlemen, this is today's News Talk. This is Lemba Dopik, and it's going to be Nick Griffin.
Your voice heard here.
The government needs to step up and do its job.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Nick Griffin, greetings. Welcome to the Lemba Dopik Show. This has taken 18 years.
It has indeed, Lemba. It's great finally to be here.
Let's start by explaining to perhaps a sceptical global public why it's taken almost two decades for us to finally have this live dialogue. What's got in the way, do you think?
I was leader of the British National Party, Britain's most controversial political party, and the most successful, electorally successful, nationalist party in British history, and they had a no platform policy for us, and you know, recently there's been a lot of fuss about people being debanked, you know, Nigel Farage and so on, debanked. Wasn't it terrible? Myself and the British National Party, we were debanked 20 years ago. In the year 2000, the party lost all its about 150 bank accounts, national and local, overnight. Interestingly, the only one which we were left with by accident turned out to be run by a state agent. So when you consider that we were under that kind of pressure 20 years ago, and everyone else has only recently caught up, that shows us how much hostility there was from the political elite to the British National Party and myself, and they were desperate to stop anybody having me on. It's not an attack. It was never an attack on me. It wasn't even an attack on you. It was an attack on the potential audience, people out there.
I want to talk about the nature of censorship in a moment. Remind us then about your political journey. You were leader of the British National Party, as you say, tremendously controversial, incessantly accused of being racist, and development from the National Front, as I recall. put it in your words, your journey to the point of leadership. And well, we can talk about what happened after that later.
Yep. I grew up in a very political household. Enoch Powell here was the family hero. By the way, this bust, Powell agreed to have this made. He sat for it and so on. He wanted this in the House of Commons, like many other previous parliamentarians. And whether you liked him or not, he was a great parliamentarian, you know, like Michael Foot and Tony Benn and others from that era. And in the end, the people in charge in the House of Commons would not allow this bust to go to the House of Commons. So it ended up on my desk instead. So I grew up in a very conservative family. Because the conservatives were soft and useless, not just on immigration. I was a teenager at the time, young teenager. They were useless on things such as not dealing effectively with the IRA, not dealing with the growing, creeping communist takeover of institutions in Britain. So I joined the National Front as a result of that. I was in that for many years. And then I had a severe accident. I, rather like yourself, I was out of politics for a couple of years. And I only got back involved because we were living up in the Shropshire Hills with a young family. A friend of mine, his daughter was a little bit older, and she went to the local primary school. And through his wife, who also worked at the primary school, he heard that the local education authority had sent someone round to this little school in a tiny village in the Shropshire Hills, about 25 kids, all of them local, and hideously white, as the BBC would say. And this bureaucrat from the education department asked, well, how did you celebrate Christmas? And the headmaster, who actually was quite a leftist, he said, well, we had a Christmas tree and a carol service and this, and they dressed up as angels and the parents watched, blah, blah, blah. This bureaucrat said to him, you can't do that next year because Shropshire is now a multicultural, multi-ethnic society, and you've got to make your Christmas multicultural or you can't have it at all. And this teacher said, but I've got no resources. Can't do it. Too small school. Don't need it. He said, he took a risk here. The only black things for miles around here is some sheep. It's irrelevant, and I've got no resources. And the bureaucrat said to him, don't worry, we can lend you some saris. And when I heard about that, I realised at that point, you couldn't run away to the hills and raise your family in isolation and hope this madness, which has got much worse since then, hope it would go away. It's a liberal totalitarian, commo fascism, whatever you want to call it, and you have to stand up to it. So I got back involved and ended up a few years later saying to people in the British National Party, look, we've got 25 years demographically before the situation in Britain in immigration terms cannot be turned around. So we've got to be serious. And I made the party, I took it from being an unelectable neo-Nazi joke into being an electable party, which for 10 years, the subtext of every single mainstream election, you remember, in Britain was how the BNP was doing and what was going to happen. So I did that and we achieved some significant things, and in the end they managed to crush us, and that's my political journey thus far.
You glossed over one of the very important statements of intent by the public. You got elected to European Parliament as an MP, MEP, member of European MEP, Parliament. How did that happen?
How did it happen? Primarily, I would say, because the entire liberal media and all the politicians kept on attacking us as extremists, racists, Nazis, all the usual smear words. And there came a point when, okay, politicians are much more unpopular now than they were even then, but they were unpopular enough. And the thing we used to get knocking doors, asking people to vote for us, was politicians, you're all the same, F off. And the more they did this to us, the more people said, I think you're different. And even if it's only to get up their noses and to make a protest, I'm going to vote for you. So I got elected in 2009, and that was on the back of 8-9 years of constant demonization. And only after that did they change, and I'm sure we'll talk about Question Time and Nigel Farage later. They, after that, realized the only way to stop us wasn't just throwing mud at us, it was actually to give people a slightly more respectable alternative and simply not to talk about us at all. And that turned out to be a far more effective strategy. But as you say, I was elected. In fact, there were two MEPs elected. It was a political earthquake in Britain when two were elected for the BNP. And we won over 100 council seats at different times when no nationalist political party in Britain had ever won one before.
My understanding is that at that time you're effectively living in a fortress, and we'll talk about that a bit later on, the personal journey. In terms of the politics, I remember very clearly in 2009, because I was a member of parliament, how terrified people were that the great racist Nick Griffin and the great racist party, the BNP, had two members of European Parliament. And it was a source of relentless debate in Parliament and outside it. What did that feel like?
I've got an anecdote on that, if we've got a moment.
Yeah, go ahead.
You may remember, up until that point, any member of the European Parliament from anywhere in the world, anywhere in Europe, had an automatic right to show their European pass and go into the House of Commons in Westminster, and vice versa. As an MP, you could have come to Brussels, waved your pass and gone through. And the minute I was elected, there was a debate or a discussion in the House of Commons. We couldn't have Nick Griffin coming into the House of Commons with his pass. So they actually changed the rules so that an MEP could only come in if he was invited by an MP. So that went through, so I couldn't go in the House of Commons. But the House of Lords, slightly more commonsensical and decent, refused to do the same, with the result that I was able to go into the House of Lords. And you'll be aware, in the middle of the entrance hall, there's the line down the middle, and one side is the House of Commons, and the other side the House of Lords. So I was told, well, if you can come in, we can't stop you, but if you put one toe over that line, we're going to grab you and throw you out. So when I went in and I walked just along this line, there's all these security guards waiting to grab me, hurl me out of the House of Commons.
Can I suggest that was a bit childish, Nick?
Of course it was, but it was great fun.
I wonder if I'd have done the same. Well, the world will never know. But now
you never know.
A few questions are coming in here. I want to get through as much as I can. I'm sure we won't get through everything today. Mallybite says the word racist means nothing now. It's what the parasites and the cabal call us patriots that love our people and our country. Also says the BBC called us out at the Voice of Wales as racist and show no evidence. We gained us over 5,000 more followers, so we sent them a thank you cake. Mingling a Ding Dong, who's more sceptical about you, Nick, says, I'm not racist, but... Mallybite says, if you haven't been called a racist by now, then you aren't trying hard enough. But there's a question here. Johnny Dollar asks, was Combat 18 part of the BNP? I remember them in the 1970s.
No, absolutely not. Combat 18, actually, you're wrong there, Johnny. They weren't around in the 1970s. They were around, they were created within a couple of weeks of the British National Party winning its first council seat, which actually was the only one that the BNP won before I took over in Millwall. And they were created. So just after the BNP actually won something, along they come and they say, there's no political solution. And they start threatening people and so on. And they had all sorts of hideous lists of members of ethnic minorities and politicians and journalists they're going to attack. Do you know, they only ever attacked one group of people. They only ever physically attacked other nationalists, and especially members of the BNP. And I was at one stage, I was the first one to call them out publicly as a state-run, state-influenced, at least, pseudo-gang. And I was on their stab on site list for several years. So absolutely nothing to do with me and the BNP.
Nevertheless, it says Wikipedia. Now, I understand Wikipedia is like, I know what you're going to say, but I think the best description of Wikipedia is it's like a mate in the pub who's had a few drinks. He's probably telling the truth, but you like to check it out yourself just in case. But the first thing it says about the British National Party, the one that you led, it says this first sentence, the British National Party is a far right British fascist political party in the United Kingdom. It still sits there.
I tried many years ago to edit my own Wikipedia entry to take out inaccuracies, and I wasn't allowed to do so. So it just wouldn't let me. So I have no faith in Wikipedia at all. And as a matter of fact, the BNP was never fascist, because fascist specifically is about, you know, believing in a corporate state and all sorts of things from the dim and distant past. And we never did. So end of.
Well, that's the kind of thing that they're still saying. Ideology. I'll just read this out to you. We're going to break in a minute, and I really want to talk about what happened on the state-sponsored station. Ideology. I'm just going to list it: British fascism, white nationalism, right-wing populism, ethnic nationalism, ultra-nationalism, hard Euroscepticism. Well, you are a hard Eurosceptic, aren't you?
I think that's sort of six out of seven ain't bad, or something like that.
One out of seven. Well, okay, not sure
if six. But one out of seven was wrong.
But the message is continuously the same, that you're a racist and mm-hmm. you're a bigot. I mean, I found the word bigot. I'm sure I could find it if I trolled you enough. And that you are essentially the doyen of all that is wrong about discriminating against people on the basis of ethnicity.
I believe that discrimination on the basis of ethnicity is entirely wrong. But when it was done in when it was done years ago against people of colour, that was wrong. People should be judged and treated and certainly given jobs and so on according to their merit and merit only. But we haven't got that problem now. There's enormous racism in our society now, all through the West, ranging from slurs and demoralization and doing kids down because of their ethnicity and heritage, through to discrimination in jobs, through to the most appalling violence up to and including rape and murder, and the police really not caring in all this when the victims of this discrimination are white people. And it's just as wrong as it was when it was members of other ethnic groups, but it's been that way for decades now, and it's getting worse all the time. So I believe we do indeed need to talk about racism. We need to talk about the reality of racism in the West, which is that people like thee and me are the victims of it.
Let's talk about that after the break. I also want to talk about next, in fact, what I've regarded as a very fascinating case study, and I'm not sure what we can see if we can define it. When you were on the state-sponsored channel on a program called Question Time, which is regarded as the crown jewels of political panel debate in the UK, and the entire program was essentially focused on you. You're watching Nick Griffin with me, Len Bitopic, having a debate, which we've been trying to have since 2006, so for 18 years. It's thanks to today's News Talk TNT we're able to have it. Do keep your calls and comments coming. After the break, I'm going to be talking about the spectacle of, and I very rarely mention it by name, but spectacle of the BBC's Question Time, when Nick Griffin was hailed as the great central individual on a particular panel. And then things took an interesting turn. And after that, I'm going to speak with Nick about all the things that I've heard about Nick, the racism arguments and everything else, and help him in the third part of the show have the space to describe what he really thinks. You'll hear it from Nick Griffin in his words, but I'll ask the questions. If you put them into tntradio.live, I'll ask the questions as best I can. All of that with me, Len Bitopic, here on TNT. I'll see you in a moment.
TNT's State of the Nation.
So Democrats voted along party lines on the first article of impeachment, which charges Mayorkas with willful and systemic refusal to comply with the law, finding the charge unconstitutional. And yeah, there we go. So this DOA on arrival, pretty much as we expected, Timothy.
This is what makes me insane. The Democrats do with impunity what the Republicans will not scruple to do. This is exactly what I said Mitch McConnell needed to do with impeachment 1.0 in early 2020. Don't give it a hearing. Don't give it the time of day. Do not dignify it by holding a trial. It was garbage. This one is real. You know, Mayorkas is clearly systemically not complying with the law. So Democrats get away with not having a trial for a legitimate impeachment, but Republicans hold a trial for an illegitimate impeachment. It makes me nuts.
State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. TNTRadio.live.
Online.
Streaming.
Be a part of the conversation.
I stream it all at work, and I stream it to my phone and listen to it wherever I go.
TNT.
Welcome back to today's New Talk. Sorry, I was still talking to Nick in the break, but we're going to cover everything we've just been discussing. Before that, a lot of commentary in the TNTRadio.live. Let me read some of the comments. And remember, I am doing this in order to ensure that we have as much free speech as we can here. Hemingway says, Mr. Griffin is a wonderfully articulate individual, would struggle to become an MP nowadays on that basis alone. I think Hemingway's complimenting you there, Nick. Therefore, Hemingway will now be pariahed. Mingling and Ding Dong says, don't know George Galloway, stranger things can happen. I suppose, right? Yeah, George Galloway did win a surprise victory recently. Probably we can touch on that as well, because Galloway takes a maverick position, but in a very successful way, in a different angle, potentially. Johnny Dollar says, thank you, Nick. You and I used to follow each other on Twitter before I was banned. Holly says, I know I'm a bit dim, but where does being proud of your country and wanting to protect it become racist? We are under attack by cultural Marxists. Holly's suggesting something similar to you there. Wiki's propaganda says Johnny Dollar. And this one from Mally Bites. I must say, Lembit is a good friend of us at Voice of Wales, and he is a good man. What you see is what you get. Lembit has never met me as I work in the shadows in tech and security. So prefer not to be public, but we will do our bit at Voice of Wales and a few veterans amongst our ranks. Holly agrees Wikipedia's hearsay. Mally Bites, Holly, you are far from dim, my friend. Oh, this kind of mutual appreciation society going on here. Which must make you jealous, Nick, because it should be all about you. I know it should be all about you. Here we are. Right. Holly says, Question Time is a scripted mouthpiece for the political lovies of the day and the pre-primed and controlled audience. No real questions there and certainly no answers, not worth watching. And on that, I want to go back into the dialogue. We've got some questions as well into the dialogue about Question Time. Now, let me set the scene. Question Time is a program on the state-sponsored channel in the United Kingdom. It's roughly an hour long, and Nick Griffin was invited to be on it. What happened next is interesting, but let's hear it directly from Nick and the run-up to it as well. I understand there's a rather ironic story behind your appearance on Question Time, Nick.
Yes, indeed. Before the rise of the BNP, pretty much anyone who was anything in politics used to get on Question Time. People from tiny little parties, socialist fringe parties and things like that, used to get on. People with no elected representation, but something interesting political to say. Fair enough. And when we started to rise, after a bit, my main media man contacted BBC about Question Time and said, look, we're in the news all the time. When are you going to have Nick Griffin on? And they came back and said, well, we decided you can't actually be on Question Time unless your party has elected representation. And you haven't. So, sorry, we'd love to have you. Can't have you. So what if he asked, what have we got to get? You'd have to have at least a councillor. So we got our first councillor elected. And he went back to the BBC and said, right, we've crossed your bar now. When are you having Nick on? Oh, we've looked at this and, you know, we have far too many parties. So actually you had to have multiple councillors. So come back when you have. So we went back when we did have. And they said, well, we've looked at this again and you're just local council level. It's not quite enough. We think that you'd have to have people at county council level or above. So we do get elected county councillors and someone to the London Assembly. So we said, right, now what about it? So no. To get on Question Time, you have to have at least two MEPs or MPs. So we finally in 2009 got that and went back and said, no, look, we got our two MEPs, we go all this down, and now if you don't do something about this and have Nick Griffin on, we think we're going to have to take you to court. And then finally they said, okay, then we'll have Mr. Griffin on sometime in July.
And so you got on. And
so then I got on, yes.
Yeah. Just a quick one. How long was that process from when you first tried to get on?
That process was from... I think that began in 2001. I got 16.4% of the vote in Oldham in the general election. First time we really hit the big time. So it was a few weeks after that. So it was 2001 to 2009. They blocked us and blocked us and blocked us. And then they finally said, all right, on you come.
8 years. So you are now. So you're finally going to be on it. It was massively trailed. Everyone was talking about it. The national media was talking about it. Yeah. The debate was actually as much about whether you should be on as it was about how you would perform. So you show up for Question Time, which I've done many times.
Well, indeed. I didn't show up automatically because the first thing among the people discussing this were the hard left, who mobilised a mob of about 4,000 outside the BBC building and said they were going to stop me getting in physically. So we actually asked the BBC, all right, so we got this huge mob and the police were not wanting to engage with us, as usual. So we asked the BBC, we said, you've got a helicopter pad on top of the building there. Can we come in by helicopter? This was somewhat tongue in cheek. They said, oh, no, sorry, we couldn't possibly arrange that. You've got to come in by car. So I came in a car in a convoy of three with my security and so on. And we were told, right, get there at a certain time. We got there a few minutes early, just in case. And we went in round the back. I don't know if you know, there's a back entrance around there. You can get cars
at
the big gates. Oh, there you go. You haven't been in the gutter long. That's your problem. So
I'm
anyway,
above
in the gutter
that,
around
Nick.
The back.
I'm above, I've never run a racist party like you allegedly. Let me carry on.
So we arrived at the gates And there was no one there except one chap on the gate and no cameras, no mob. And he didn't let us in. The police came along, just three or four of them, and they held it. They kept us there as well. And we were held there for long enough for the mob around the other side to be told where we were. Uh-huh. And then 5 or 6 minutes later, there's all the TV cameras there, and there's the mob trying to smash up our cars and trying to physically kill me. And only then did the BBC open the gates to let us in. I was used to that sort of thing, but it's still pretty hairy. It doesn't really put you in the right frame of mind for a civilized, sensible debate. But anyway, we're stuck in the green room. David Dimbleby came in to see me and said, right, it's the normal rules. It's a normal question time. That's it. In you come and be civilized and we'll see how it goes. And of course, it wasn't a normal question time at all.
And so back to you. Who's in charge here? This is my show, not yours, Nick. Get your own.
Sorry.
You have got your own, by the way. No, it's all right. I know you work for the Templar, Knights Templar International. I think you've got some broadcasting there. So there you are now. They've got the rent a mob to get the pictures that they wanted from the sound of it. You're in there. I can't remember. Something like 12 or 14 million people were watching. Orders of magnitude
they said 9 million absolutely live. And then clips of it and stuff on later on, you went on above that. One thing, but before the show starts, you'll know, but viewers won't, they do a sort of a test run. At least they did with me, anyway. One of your people talked about a hand-picked audience. And they are indeed. In the test run, there was a black fella, very well dressed, smartly dressed, suit and tie, who got up and spoke from a conservative point of view. And the entire audience, bar the two people who were members of mine, who they were allowed in as our token presence, very nice of them, the entire audience howled him down and was screaming, he's a racist. He's black as the ace of spades, but a conservative, and they wouldn't have that. So that shows the extent to which that audience was packed to be as hostile as possible.
So you start, and as I recall it, I was watching it again recently for a different reason. The whole thing, I'll have to be careful because I don't want to lead you or get accused of trying to get you in a certain direction here. But my impression, and it was my opinion, was that the entire hour was directed at you.
Yes,
but would you put it in your words?
Well, I prepared for it a little bit by watching when they had Gerry Adams on for the first time. And, the first couple of questions was, as you'd expect, have you stopped ordering people to be killed? Hard stuff against Adams and the IRA. And then after a bit, they moved on to discussing the transport crisis or whatever it was, just like a normal question time. So slightly naively, I thought it would be the same thing. And then I might have 10 minutes of this. And then after that, they change. But of course, they announced afterwards, hadn't told me at the time, and Dimbleby had said it's going to be a normal question time. They announced afterwards that they'd broken from their normal pattern for the first time in 33 years in order to deal with me. And what they were doing, they decided, just throwing abuse at Griffin and the BNP isn't working. We need to expose what they really stand for. You remember, this was one of the main justifications for having me on. They're saying we've got to expose him for what he really stands for. So their mantra is that the BNP was racist, fascist, Islamophobic, and homophobic. So the first part was, they split it into four. The first part was designed to show that they started off with actually fascist. So that's just throwing all sorts of mud and not really allowing me to respond. It was all one way. And then they moved on to racist, Islamophobic, and homophobic. And in this, they actually let me speak a little bit, but in a way that I was confirming in the simplest, quickest possible way, the bare bones of where we stand without the nuances. There was no time for those. So they were very pleased by the end of it that they'd, with their comments and what I was saying about where we stood. So for instance, on the homophobic thing, they produced a story of some homosexual pop star who died 10 days before. And it was about that and so on. And in summary, I said, look, what people do behind closed doors is entirely up to them. It's forcing it on our children that's the problem. And frankly, I find the sight of two men kissing in public creepy. That's it. It's just my personal view, because they asked me for my personal view. So that's what I said. So anyway, with these things, they concluded they'd done what they wanted, which was to let me expose myself and say what we really stand for. They were therefore obviously horrified when the opinion poll that the Sunday Times did, I think just a couple of days later, came out, and the BNP before had never been above 6% in the poll of people either voting for us or seriously consider voting for us. The week after Question Time, it went up to 22%. So at that point, the BBC very clearly realised their plan hadn't worked. So from that day onwards, I was never on any TV channel except at times of election when it was actually a legal requirement. And in the end, they did a lot to kill the BNP off by simply making the public think he's got elected and he's gone away, which I hadn't.
Looking back at your experience on Question Time, and a lot of people who come on to TNT talk about state-sponsored media being biased. Mm-hmm. What's your conclusion about impartiality at the BBC and specifically with that programme?
There is absolutely no partiality on the BBC, on that programme, or anything else. And it's not just political. You look at something like Countryfile, and it's wall-to-wall propaganda for the global man-made global climate warming hoax and so on. So the BBC is a hardcore left liberal apparatchik propaganda operation. And the only thing the British people can do is stop watching it and get themselves off live TV, get the modern system so they don't have to have a TV license, and stop paying the TV license and defund the bloody thing. That's the only way to deal with the BBC.
I'm hardly surprised that you feel that strongly. And I welcome, we've only got 25 minutes, but welcome comments from others who are coming in as well. A few comments about that before we talk about some of the questions which are coming in. And then after the break, in a mm-hmm. few minutes' time, I want to talk about where you stand politically and your ambitions now. Peter McCabe again says he should not have done Question Time. It was an obvious trap. Holly says, I agree, a setup to wind up the public mood. But it's okay for a celebrity chef to get in there, idiots. There should just have... there just has to be a bad guy, doesn't there? Even if most of the country would be agreeing with him. Mazzy goes, helicopter, really? Yeah, he didn't get a helicopter. He came in by car, Mazzy. It was just a possibility. Yeah. Holly says, doesn't surprise me at all. Staged and horrible, nasty Marxists. So looking forward to them falling in an epic and painful way. As red as the King of Hearts. And Holly uses even stronger language about Countryfile. a couple of few questions for you here. On the Question Time thing, I'll just ask you, did you feel that it was just the BBC, just the state-sponsored station, or did you generally get that from the mainstream media?
I got that from the entire mainstream media. The BBC was the worst, and it's the most insulting because our voters' taxes go towards it, and it's supposed to be particularly impartial. But, you know, ITN, Sky, all the rest of it, they all, you know, treated us totally differently to how they do everybody else. And the bias was right the way across the board.
A few other questions for you here. And by the way, I will put some of the questions about racism and everything quite directly afterwards. Yeah. So really, if we had a bit more time, I really think we should still try and have a debate on the platform at some point. Jack Sinclair says, when did Nick Griffin become a Christian?
Well, I was brought up as a Christian. It's very difficult. In fact, it's impossible to be an Anglican when your archbishops and bishops are communists, LGBT activists, or probably more enough atheists. So I just sort of dropped that. So I came back to Christianity, partly as initially a cultural Christianity, thinking that we can't deal with either the problems of atheism or the problems of Islamification. You can't take a knife to a gunfight. You're fighting a religion, because atheism is a religion just as much as Islam or Christianity. So you had to have a religion to fight against it. So initially it was from a heritage political sort of point of view. The more I've looked into it and so on, and felt it and prayed, the more I concluded that, you know, I am a Christian, a traditionalist Christian. People on the right, typically, a lot of them think, you know, they look at the modern church leaders and they see this wall-to-wall horror of multicultural, LGBT, climate change, worshipping the Mother Earth thing, and they think, well, that's Christianity. It's not. Traditional Christianity, whether it's Calvinism or Latin Mass Catholicism or Russian Orthodoxy, which is where my sympathies lean. It's a real hardcore, proper faith, and you can't get rid of the big problems. You can't deal with the big problems facing our society, the biggest of which is the fact people aren't having enough children. The one thing that guarantees that people have large numbers of children, which we need, is religious faith. So therefore, I'm a very firm Christian in my own belief and in terms of feeling that is the way the country needs to go.
A few more quick questions, then we'll go to a break. Well, comment here. YouTube comment from Jet Grand. Well done, TNT. Nerves of steel. I'm not sure it takes nerves of steel to believe in free speech, but okay, thank you. I'll take the compliment. Yeah, I'll take it. Here's one I don't understand, but you might, Nick. Ask Nick about the Kalergi plan. Does that mean anything to you?
Yeah, indeed it does. Richard Kuten of Kalergi was the founder of the European Union, effectively. He was the one who came up with the idea of a European Union. He even wrote, he chose the flag, he wrote the anthem and so on. And he came up with this plan in the early 20s for two things, basically to stop war, to do away with nations and to have a European Union. And also he was saying that there's a problem with the white race, with the Europeans, and that we need to get rid of them. And the way to do it is through mass immigration and then racial integration and miscegenation. And then the future of the world, of Europe, will be a coffee-coloured race with only, I'm sorry, this is deeply politically incorrect, but he said it, with the people running the show being the only pure race of all, who will be the Jews, who the Europeans persecuted for centuries. As a result, they're a small, hardcore, he called them the new nobility, and they are going to run the show, lording it over the mixed race helot masses. That's the Kuten-Kalergi plan. And now you're in real trouble for letting me say that.
No, it was a fact. Free speech is about saying things rather than censoring them. I believe that I trust my viewership enough to make their own judgments about the things you're saying. Yeah. I don't get. Are you promoting the Kalergi plan or just explaining it?
No, I'm just explaining it, and then they can go and look it up. They'll find it these days a little bit hard to find the references to not just the mixed race you can find, but the thing about who will then rule, that's hard to find. But if your viewers go digging a little bit, they will find it and they'll see that I'm not making this up to make people hate someone. I'm simply reporting a fact and answering the question.
Perhaps we'll need to have you back to talk specifically about this at time in the future. I'm not avoiding the question. I just want to cover everything else.
Yes, indeed. It's a very complex question. Yeah.
Yeah. And also there'll be those who'll want to challenge if you think it's true, if it's not true and so on. Do you think it's true?
Absolutely so, yeah. Well, the man existed, his books are there, and if you look at what's happened since, it's happening. You know, the great replacement, they call it a tinfoil hat conspiracy theory. It's a simple fact. The only thing where the far right get it wrong is they complain, lots of them, they complain about the fact we're being replaced, and then they don't have children of their own. And as far as I'm concerned, unless you do something about that, you don't really have much right to complain.
Yeah. I intuitively, I feel I disagree with what you've said. The problem is I don't know much about the Kalergi plan. It doesn't feel right to me. I don't feel that there is a Jewish conspiracy, and maybe that isn't exactly what Kalergi says. So I don't want to start.
No, he didn't say that, actually. He himself was only very slightly Jewish. He was the son of an Austrian diplomat and a Japanese woman. And he was a complete mixed race, and he wasn't saying I'm a Jew, you know, I'm coming up with this. He said this is what is going to happen.
Yeah, I'm slightly out of my depth on that one, and just to the viewers, I'm not avoiding the subject, but I can only really debate this with Nick from a position of information. And
let's come back to it another time.
Yeah, we'll do.
I think that'd be really good.
Yeah, my feeling is that I disagree with what you've said, but I need to study it as well. And if you're willing to come back, we'll focus on this properly. I need to talk it from a position of information. Peter Jones asks a slightly easier question, and after this, we'll go to a break. How do you stop corporate institutionalized prejudice against Caucasian people in Britain and the rest of Europe?
By withdrawing as far as you can from their system. You know, if you send your kids, in order for your family to be really connected with this corporate system, you've got to be educated, university level and so on. So you've got to have an enormous debt in order to go and work for people who hate you for 30, 40 years doing something you really don't like, having a holiday a couple of weeks a year, then you die. And the only way to deal with it is get away from that. Don't send your kids to university to get a vast debt and spend their lives working for a system that hates us and paying taxes, which are used against us and against decent things. Get your sons a trade so they earn cash, and avoid paying tax as much as you possibly can, and get your daughters married as young as possible, having lots and lots of lovely children. That's the way you avoid this thing. We can't stop it. We have to endure its inevitable collapse and start again on the other side.
That's in itself, these days, quite an anti-woke agenda, I have to say. We'll come back to that in just a minute, because it ties into the third part of what I want to discuss, which is your agenda and your narrative. We've had a hint of it there. You're listening to Lembotopic, speaking with Nick Griffin, after 18 years of trying to have this debate. You can agree or disagree. My mission is to give Nick the best space to share his views, which aren't obviously necessarily the views of TNT or myself, but I do try to have a serious debate. And there's more to be discussed. Just to stress on the Kalergi plan, the only reason I'm not going deeper into it is I don't know enough about it, not because I'm trying to avoid the debate. My intuition is not to agree with Nick on that one, but I can't say for sure where I stand until I study it. And we will come back to that at some point in the future. In the next part of the program, I want to speak with Nick about where he does stand in terms of politics, his credo now. As much as I can, I'll include your discussions as well and your commentary as well. You're listening to Lembotopic here on today's News Talk TNT. It is the home of free speech. I'll see you in a few minutes.
Sometimes life can be overwhelming, and suicide may seem like the only way to relieve the pain. Beyond Now is an evidence-based app created by Beyond Blue to help you cope when suicidal thoughts start to appear. You can use it to create an easy-to-follow plan that is personal to you and includes steps like know your warning signs so you can act early, make your environment safe by removing harmful items, activities you can do or people you can be with to distract yourself from suicidal thoughts, reminders of things that make you feel strong. Some of these steps might be tough to fill out, and that's okay. It can be helpful to make or share your safety plan with a trusted friend, family member, or mental health professional. You might feel like you're alone, but help is available. If you're worried you can't stay safe, use the red telephone icon to call your emergency contacts. Download the free Beyond Now app today to create your personal safety plan.
Might not see it coming. It's pre-diabetes, and it captures one in three adults. But you can escape. Take the 1 minute pre-diabetes risk test to know where you stand and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
You're listening to Lembotopic on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Lembotopic Show, where I'm speaking with Nick Griffin, the former leader of the British National Party, former member of European Parliament, a man who's been cancelled a great deal and has been accused of racism, anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, many other things too. We were talking about the Kalergi plan, which I can't go into in detail because I don't know enough about it, but we will come back. Nick's agreed to come back and maybe we'll have a debate with others on this as well. It says that apparently, well, this is, I apologize for this, Nick. It is Wikipedia, but it's all I can find in a hurry. The Kalergi plan, sometimes called the Coudenhove Kalergi conspiracy, is a debunked far-right, anti-Semitic, white genocide conspiracy theory. There's so much in that. I just can't go further in it now. But I have to stress, it's not because I'm avoiding the subject. I just need to be in a position of information before I can engage with you about it properly. While I'm really tempted, because it's a fascinating debate, I probably need to leave that for now. I'll come back to it some other time and I'll be forewarned and forearmed. What I really want to do in the remaining 10 minutes we have is talk about where you stand now in politics. You still regarded by many as a racist, anti-Semite, homophobe. I'm sure you're still getting those criticisms. But where do you stand? You said 25 years ago, if racial integration wasn't racial integration or
immigration.
Put it in your words. Yeah, you said it better than me.
Well, can I go back even a little bit further than that? I grew up in a very political household. My father, as a young man, was in the RAF during the Second World War, and he was stationed in India for part of that time. and he was training young Indians to repair radios. He said they were, you know, they were great lads. He liked them, and they were Hindus and Sikhs and Muslims, and they all seemed to get on, and he liked them all. And then almost overnight, suddenly they were attacking each other in the classroom, and they all went AWOL and went away and butchered each other's families. And he said that's the problem with multi-ethnic, multi-religious societies. They're fundamentally unstable. We should never allow this to happen to Britain. You see, perhaps it'll work, because perhaps something so magical about Britain that you know, we can have a multicultural society without it falling apart and having these tensions, but it probably won't. It's not necessary. Don't do it. So that's where I came from, and it's really where the National Front and then the BNP came from. It was people with that kind of view. That's the problem. Individual immigrants is not a problem. Some of them are very nice people. Some of them are nicer than many of our people. But en masse, mixing two or three communities up in a small island or more is not a good idea. So that's where we came from. So as you said, I'd say 25 years ago when I first was elected to run the British National Party, we haven't got this long to turn this around before demographically it's too late. And then there's no political road back. And so we're at that stage. So I haven't really changed that much, but the time has run out for a political solution, even if it was possible with all the opposition block and so much, don't think it is. So we are now where we are. We've got a multiracial, multicultural society, which is extraordinarily unstable, just by the nature of the beast. You think, you know, Rwanda, former Yugoslavia, India in 1948, these things often go wrong. But we are where we are. We've now got to try to make it work. So that to me means that we don't want, I don't want, and I don't think most people want, and I know black people and Hindus and Sikhs don't want it either. We don't want an assimilationist, exterminationist thing whereby everybody loses their culture, loses their tradition, loses their faith, loses their separate identity, and just becomes the coffee-coloured mass of helots, without, you know, just easily manipulated. We don't want that. So if we're going to have a multicultural society, which we've now got, it needs to be more like the model of that in, say, Lebanon or even Syria, before the Western security services, including the Mossad and the Wahhabi fanatics of Saudi Arabia, set about tearing it apart. So we have to try now to build a society where the Sikhs and so on do their thing, and the Hindus and the Muslims likewise, and the British, and especially the English. So to make this thing work, we've got to stop the position that everyone can celebrate their, you know, special days and so on, but St. George's Day, fly a flag and you're a racist Nazi bigot. We've got to put that right. And we're now going to be the minority in our own country by 2060. It's inevitable, cannot be changed. But we're still going to be the largest minority. And I believe that if we're well organized, and that's the job I'm really about now, confident and well organized and practical about it, we can not only be the largest majority, the largest minority, but also the minority that still holds a great deal of sway and is, if you like, the ballast that helps to keep this entirely new way of running a society for us sort of stable. So that's what we've got to try and do. And for that, instead of just saying we've got to send them all back or something like that, it's too late. You can't do it. We've got to find ways of working together to build a society which is about we the people and our culture and our identity, not about the global elite just ruling over us and doing what the hell they want. Because if we don't stop them and get rid of them, actually, they are going to get rid of us. That's the plan.
If you were to become, Home Secretary, probably the most relevant position, if Rishi Sunak called you up and said, everyone else has had a go at the job, why don't you have a go at it, Nick? What would you do with that role?
What would I do with that role? I would shut the gates, because we're a very overcrowded country, and all the more people you bring in, the more the instability is. So I do that. And I would kick out all the foreign criminals and all those sort of things. Then for the people who are here, I'd say, look, we're in this together. We can't now get around this. And it's up to you to make in your own community to make sure that your community does things and doesn't do things to make sure that you're a part of a decent civilized society. So I would say, for instance, to the Muslims that the grooming gangs problem is from sections of your society. And you say you condemn it, and I believe that they condemn it. But we need to see more than condemnation. We need to see action. I'm not blaming them for it. And in fact, I'm not even blaming them for their inaction. Because why should Muslims in parts of northern England and so on take action to protect young girls from groomers in their community when none of those girls fathers or brothers or uncles lifted a finger to do anything about it either. And our community, the police, the politicians, the media, either simply ignored it or they arrested and bullied and demonized those who were talking out about it. So we've got to sit down with these different communities and say, look, we're in a multicultural society. None of us is going to become the supreme masters and do away with all the others. We've got to work on ways to make this work. And the most important thing for the Home Secretary would be to deal with issues such as the fact that white working class lads, boys, are the absolute bottom of the educational ladder with, you know, they're completely cut off from ambition and purpose and so on. And that's partly because in school, on the television, in the music industry and so on, there's nothing about white people in general and British in particular and English especially, except you're guilty. You're guilty for racism. You're guilty for slavery. You're absolutely useless. Go away and die. You know, dead white males and so on. And the sooner you are, all the better. That's got to be put right because it's the alienation that's coming from that for young people, which actually creates the sort of hatreds, which is very easy for people to exploit. And there are powers in the world who want to see Britain and Europe and America torn apart in civil war, because while the peasants are too busy fighting each other, they can't fight the people who are trying to dominate, rob and control us or get rid of us.
A few fairly short and direct questions, Nick. I do hope that you'll be able to come back again, because we're really only scratching the surface here. But a few obvious questions, and I'd say it like it is. Some people say you just don't like people on the basis of skin colour. How would you respond to that?
No, like I said, I think that creating a mass multicultural thing in Britain with literally hundreds of different ethnic groups, many of whom hate each other. You go to London or Birmingham and you talk to the West Indian community about the Africans and vice versa. They loathe each other. You look somewhere like Leicester, where there's big problems building up there. And we've seen the incidents of Hindu mobs and Muslim mobs going up against each other, and especially the BJP, the Indian Hardline Nationalist Government, is pouring money into radicalizing that community in places like Leicester in order to have them as a political bloc, having a little bit of effect in India as well. But I know someone there who works in housing. He said that the communities in Leicester are falling up, they're separating. People, Muslims who are a minority in a Hindu area are swapping houses with Hindus who are a minority in a Muslim area. The whites are getting out. It's the same in council social housing and in private housing. The communities are separating like this. And if you look back at the history of Northern Ireland, that was happening in 1965, 66, 67, before it all went bang. It's a very dangerous thing. And as I say, I'm not against them, and they are here now, but we have to find out a way to make this thing work. And I say again, The first step towards that is giving the British and the English and white people, if you want to use that label, at least recognition and a parity of esteem in this country, which at present we do not have.
Last question. We only got a minute, really, and time's gone very quickly. My parents are both from Estonia, from Northern Europe. And would you treat my parents differently too if they'd come from, say, Africa?
No, absolutely not. I think if at any point you say, right, we have to have another 100,000 immigrants or 500,000 immigrants this coming year, it's ordained by God, we've got to have them, right? Who do you want? I would have said, well, let's have Christian East Europeans because they're the nearest to us and they are very, very assimilable. The more different people are, whether it's by faith, language, ethnicity, or whatever, the harder it is to assimilate them. And if you assimilate them, the more it changes the nature of what was there before. So there's that difference. But it doesn't make the person who is very, very black with African parents any less worthy of being a human being than you.
There's a whole debate. That's going to kick off a whole hour in the future, Nick. I've got to do my homework about Kalergi. I have to find some great challenging questions to see if I can expose whether you are a racist or not the next time you're on. I hope you feel that you've had a fair dialogue.
Very fair,
today.
Thank you very much. And thanks to TNT as well.
Well, it's thanks to today's News Talk TNT that we're able to have the debate that you couldn't have on Question Time. And there's more to discuss as well. I really want to dig deeper into what you said at the end there. Nick Griffin, thank you so much. 18 years in the making. Well, have you back soon as well. And with that, dear viewers, we're out of time. Hope you found that interesting. I hope that you feel I've been fair in that dialogue. I'll be back again tomorrow morning. Don't miss me. This is the Lambertopic Show. This is today's News Talk. Have a great day. I'll see you tomorrow.